not honoring the job description. This is so common. So common for people just to skim through, just read the job title. Oh, yeah, that's the job title that I want. This is the organization that would suit me. Like usually people are so excited about the organization and the job title, they actually forget to read the job description. And you can't do that. You know, there's so many things in the job description that will help you write a great cover letter and a resume. So honor the job description, understand what it is that it's asking for the next candidate, even if you have information and intelligence about who was doing that role before. Never underestimate the job description. Hi, I'm Renata Bernardi, and this is the Job Hunting Podcast, where I interview experts and professionals and discuss issues that are important for job hunters and those who are working to advance their careers. So make sure that you subscribe and follow, and let's dive right in. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. I was just thinking something, and I need to share with you. It's so frustrating at times when I have planned ahead for the subjects that I want to discuss, and I have done my research and organized my notes, and then I don't want to record about it anymore. I find something else that I want to talk about. And oh, it's so frustrating, but I have ideas for this podcast all the time. Some people think it's really hard for me to put together these ideas, and it's not. If anything, I have more ideas than weeks in the year to share with you. Topics for your career and to support your job hunting, it's crazy. So this time, I'm trying to merge something that's been on my mind with an article that I read a few weeks ago. Can't remember exactly. Let me see when this article was written. It's definitely something I found not too long ago. I liked the title. It appealed to me. And I'm going to react to it. It's a reaction podcast episode. It was written by a freelance writer called Johanna Ambrosio. She is an IT freelance writer, and she wrote an article about the 12 job hunting mistakes no IT leader should make. And I'm going to link it below. If you're in IT, you will find this very useful. I'm going to change this to job hunting mistakes that senior executives make, and I see them making all the time, and they shouldn't. And I really resonated with what Johanna wrote here, and I wanted to react to her headings and the things she said under each of the headings. And then at the end of this episode, I have a few things that I have been reacting as well from consultations that I'm having, clients, people that reach out to me, wanting to work with me. And I'm going to share with you what those mistakes are. Because ideally, of course, I want to work with you. If you're ready for career coaching, come talk to me. If you're ready for my online courses or my services like LinkedIn Audit, look at the website, sign up. But there are some things that you don't need to pay me for to get it right. I actually want to work with you with some more interesting topics, more sort of sophisticated career planning and design. These little mistakes can be easily fixed. I think the difference is, I'm coming up with an analogy here. The difference is when you go to a GP, a general practitioner, because you have some illness, and the GP fixes it straight away, right? It's easy to fix. Try this, take this medication, or try this physio exercise, see if it helps, and then, you know, you can move on. I want you to try these little fixes, see if it helps. And if it doesn't help, then reach out to me, because that will be more fun and a better investment for you and a better use of my time. So many times I repeat myself a lot in consultations because people perceive their problems to be unique to them when in fact they are unique to many job seekers. Lots of people have questions and issues just like yours. And that's why investing in a very cheap online course like my Research Your Career could probably solve your career issues. It's because I've amalgamated all of these sort of common problems that people have, and I put together a little course. You can do it. And maybe some of the things in the course you already know, tick, 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 don't worry about them. But there will probably be things there that you hadn't thought about, and it could be a solution for your problem. All right, let's start from Johanna's first grandiose headline here. Going grandiose is her first mistake, one of the 12 that she listed in her article, 12 mistakes IT professionals make when they're job seeking. And I think she's right. And I think that going grandiose, I'm going to define it soon, but I think going grandiose has been exacerbated now when professionals use ChatGPT to review their resumes and their cover letters, because ChatGPT has a very grandiose narrative. Have you noticed? Please hit me up on LinkedIn, DM me on LinkedIn or X or IG if you also feel that when you're adding things. Let's say you have a draft of your resume or you add your LinkedIn profile to ChatGPT and you ask for it to come up with your cover letter or your resume, it comes out so grandiose and you have to be careful because sometimes ChatGPT just lies. It just makes shit up. So you have to be very careful. So going grandiose is a problem that I see with candidates. And look, yes, you have done amazing things in your careers, but there are candidates that rewrite their resumes in a way that is overselling themselves in a way that doesn't look correct and doesn't sort of appeal to the recruiter as well. Even the words that you use, it's also just sort of overselling in a way that doesn't appeal. Okay. So employers don't really care about a couple of things that might have been really important to you. You know, many awards that you have achieved, high marks in your early career, in your master's, those things also don't appeal anymore. The best solution for you is super simple, is for you not to try too hard. Just let the facts speak for themselves and trust them. You have had an amazing career. You don't need to oversell it to be shortlisted for a role. It's more to do with the technicality of understanding how the recruitment process works, both the technical software side of things and the recruiter's eyes, the hiring manager's eyes. What I mean by that is your resume will most likely be read by bots and by humans, and you have to understand how to appeal to the bot and to the human. And being grandiose in your language and in the way that you're portraying yourself usually doesn't make any difference to bots and might make a detrimental change to how the recruiter sees you. So I hope that sort of clears it up. And it's hard to find the language to talk about yourself. And we're going to continue to talk about that with the next big mistake from this article, and it's failing to back up your claims. And this is so interesting because I work with a lot of senior executives that have achieved a lot and they do have metrics to show because, especially at their level, they have been in leadership positions, so they could feel even more comfortable backing up claims, right? But they don't. Usually they would write things like, I'm a great problem solver, or I'm a visionary leader. In the article, Johanna says, you know, one of the things she has seen is I am a visionary innovator. But where are the metrics to back up your claims? So it's really important to show those receipts, to show the metrics. I have taken an organization from A to B. I have led a project that achieved X% or you know, XYZ outcomes. You have to back up those claims in dot points somewhere along the line. I mean, it could be the first page where you're making your claim to fame, or it could be under each of your roles. So in those job descriptions, I would strongly recommend not using grandiose language or non-specific language and using more specific accomplishments and metrics, especially those that have a story arc that takes an organization from A to B, that show a change. That's what recruiters and hiring managers love to see. The third mistake listed in this article is misunderstanding what makes a good interview. I see this happening a lot with more experienced professionals. They continue to prepare for interviews in the same way that a young graduate professional would prepare for interviews. So putting a lot of emphasis in preparing for behavioral questions, for example, which is important, and people should know that there is a recipe for answering questions that follow a format where you are describing the problem, solving the problem, and showing the outcomes. You can use a STAR format. It's very well known. The situation, task, action, result. I find that for more experienced professionals, it's more a situation strategy, action, result, because you might not have a task as much. You might have been designing and developing solutions more strategically and more overarching. But either way, that is not the case. What we're saying here is that interviews at a more senior, more experienced level requires you to have a better understanding of people's body languages, more emotional intelligence, you know, that understanding of what's going on in the room, letting people talk. You know, one of the things that I hear a lot in my clients is that, oh, you know, I went for the interview and the CEO talked the entire time and I didn't say a word. That is not necessarily a bad interview, you know. It's important to understand that at that level, things are less structured and it's more of a conversation. And if that's the style of the CEO, let's say you're applying for a head of marketing position or a CFO position and you're dealing now directly with your future manager, which could be the CEO, for example. If he's talking the whole time and not allowing you to talk much, that doesn't mean you're not going to get the job. That is more a reflection point for you to check out if this is the sort of leadership that you want to work for, because that's his personality or that's her personality. And that's probably how it's going to be after you get the job. So, you know, it goes both ways as well. So misunderstanding that a good interview is you interviewing them as much as them interviewing you as you go up in the corporate ladder, you know, those things do matter for you to have the ability to exert your leadership style, work in a culture that suits you, that, you know, is appropriate for where you want to go in your career. As we get more experience, we actually get pickier, I think, with culture and values and purpose and, you know, ambition as well. We have less time to achieve our career goals. So those things are really important in terms of understanding what makes a good interview for those more senior roles, I think is really a mistake I see happening quite often. Overlooking the power of practice. Oh, my dear Lord. That's like when I read this, when I reached this part of the article from Johanna. By the way, it's in the CIO magazine and she has other articles as well. So I'm going to link that in the show notes below if you're interested to see this article and all the articles. But overlooking the power of practice, what can I say? The headline says it all. People just don't practice. They don't practice for job interviews. They don't practice for important conversations that can make or break decision makers' ability to understand you, you know? So that important first conversation with a recruiter, how many times have I heard this from my clients that they didn't realize that conversation was so important? And then working with me now, we practice for that first conversation. And that first conversation, it hits you up. You need to be prepared. You know, nobody's going to book a time. Most likely, it's just a call that you get out of the blue. And it could be from the recruiter. It can be from the CEO, like a client of mine recently. He applied for a senior IT manager role, and the CEO of the organization called him out of the blue on a Thursday afternoon before Easter. And he had to, you know, just right there and then answer some important questions that would then help this person decide who she wanted to shortlist to have more deeper conversations. You have to be ready. And that practice is pre-work. That's why coaching is so important, is so that you can prepare for your job search to flow easily and for you not to feel as overwhelmed and stressed as you would if you hadn't done that preparation. It's not to say that you can't do it on your own, and that's why I'm sharing with you, but that's a big mistake. Overlooking the power of practicing for your job search, for the interviews, for conversations. Then the next mistake is not seeing yourself clearly. This is so common for very experienced professionals not to see themselves clearly, not to know if they are generalists or experts, not know if they are good leaders of people or good leaders of projects and what they want in their careers from this point onwards. I'm talking about people that have extensive professional experience, people that I work with that reach out to me in their 40s and 50s and 60s. I'm not talking about young professionals here, everybody. And still, they don't know what they want to achieve, where they're heading. It's interesting because you may think that people that are more experienced would have those things sorted out. But no, they reach out to me because they want to sort these things out. They want to start taking control of their career so that the next two decades, which could probably be the final decades of their career, that those two decades are intentional, that they move mindfully towards both their financial goals and their professional and career goals, which sometimes go hand in hand, many times go hand in hand. So this is really interesting because looking for opportunities both internally and externally really requires professionals to understand themselves so that they can talk about themselves and what they are trying to achieve in the short term and in the long term. Good recruiters, good headhunters will ask you what you want to achieve in 10 years' time, in 5 years' time, and having a crisp and clear answer to those important questions is important for the recruiter. It's one of the ways that they're assessing you vis-a-vis the assignment they have from their clients. And it could be that you might be a great match based on your answers to those questions. You might be a great match for the client. But if you're not, it's not the end of the world. It might be a good match for some other clients of theirs. So it's important for the recruiter to understand you well so that they can help you in your career, keeping in mind that you are not their client, but it's important for recruiters to have great connections with good candidates like yourself so that when they have new assignments, they can say to their clients, the employer, look, I have some great people to introduce you to right away. So telling them what you want is really important. Failing to have foresight is the next mistake listed in this article. This is why I think I should be friends with this woman. Because if you've been a long-time listener of the podcast, you know that I talk about foresight a lot, right? So foresight is very different from forecast. Forecast is based on previous data. So past data that you use to understand the future. We know now that although forecast is and will continue to be important, foresight is what great leaders need to have to deal with the fast-paced changes that are happening in the workforce, in industries, in the world, really. So having that foresight to anticipate issues, to be agile when things happen very quickly and you need to adapt, and that could be losing a job, having, you know, your role completely changed, having you reporting to somebody else, understanding that 5 years from now, half of your workforce will be AI and not humans, like whatever it is, you need to understand that and anticipate it and be prepared. He or she is saying, find a mentor who can act as a career Sherpa to advise you on how to invest your professional capital. I agree with that. I find that sometimes people think that finding a mentor to learn from is usually somebody who is older than you. I have found that in order for you to build great foresight, you need to have probably not just a mentor, but a boardroom of people that are of all ages and backgrounds, so that you don't get stuck in the past, for example, by having a mentor who has more of a conservative nature. I get a lot of advice and learnings from people that are much younger than me. And I think a mix of those things is what you really need. And this is not something new or an idea of mine. I remember reading, you know, old books about how things used to happen at General Motors, for example. And, you know, during the 80s and 90s, and this idea of having younger people mentor older professionals was already happening back then. So this is nothing new, but I think it's really more important than ever to do right now. The next mistake that is listed in this article is getting rusty on tech. Now, this is a big pet peeve of mine. And it's interesting that whenever this happens in a consultation, frankly, it doesn't happen in consultations as much. It's more when people book a time to talk to me as a prospect client that I can see how rusty they are with technology. Because I use Zoom. Like, Zoom is really easy to use. Everybody should use and know how to use Zoom and also Teams. If you use Zoom and Teams and you can navigate backwards and forwards between the two, and, you know, your cameras will work and your microphones will work and you can have the audio working straight away, then I know everything is fine. But usually, I would say 8 times out of 10, when people book a time to see me, things don't work well. Their internet, usually they're at home, their internet is not fast enough. We have gaps, you know, people are trying to talk to me and they freeze. They don't know how to operate their cameras. They don't know how to change their audio settings. That cannot be. You cannot have that in the world we have today, because your interviews will most likely be happening online. And you know this, right? So what usually happens is people now work hybridly. So they have a laptop that is the work laptop and that is up to date. And they have Teams there. Usually they work with Teams and it's all good. When they want to talk to me, they get their old personal PC that they haven't used for anything. And then things don't work. And then they reach out to either their phones or their work PC to continue that conversation with me. So you need to not be rusty with your technology. And this is just like the tip of the iceberg, right? Because in many professions, there is really important technology challenges that are happening, be it cybersecurity or AI or machine learning or cloud or, you know, even the basic stuff like CRMs and SAPs, project management tools, Slack, and other ways of communicating. People now are basically using a lot of the Microsoft tools and resources. But either way, you have to be familiar and comfortable and use it extensively. The next mistake is not honoring the job description. This is so common for people just to skim through, just read the job title. Oh, yeah, that's the job title that I want. This is the organization that would suit me. Like, usually people are so excited about the organization and the job title, they actually forget to read the job description. And you can't do that. You know, there's so many things in the job description that will help you write a great cover letter and a resume. Job descriptions are used for keywording into HES systems. So if you're applying for a job in any financial institution these days, large manufacturing, large retail companies, you know, government jobs, higher education jobs, chances are it will go through an HES system first. So even if you have a connection within the organization that has told you there's a job, you know, usually more senior people sometimes, you know, get a call or are incentivized to apply, it still goes through the HES system and it needs to perform well there. So honor the job description, understand what it is that it's asking for the next candidate, even if you have information and intelligence about who was doing that role before. I have a situation now where one of my clients is working for an organization and we have a feeling that the CEO is about to leave. Even if she knows a lot about the role, she wants to apply for the role. Even if she knows a lot about the role, works for the CEO, that doesn't mean she knows what the board wants the next CEO to be. And there will be clues in the job description that will tell her what is it that the board now wants the next CEO to have, at what stage the board believes the organization is at, and what sort of CEO type they need for that next stage of the organization. So never underestimate the job description. Losing sight of the social media details. So this is an interesting one because many of my executives don't like social media. They don't like it in the sense that they see LinkedIn as being social media, and it sort of goes hand in hand with being rusty on tech and not understanding that social media now plays a big part in the research that organizations and recruiters will do about you. They will Google your name. They will see what comes up. So, A, you want all of your social media that is social to be private. And look, if you are comfortable with it being public, then know that your future employers and recruiters will be looking at them. So if that's okay with you, that's fine, but just know that that will happen. And then understand that LinkedIn is not social media per se. It's an important part of the recruitment process. And what you add there in your profile and in your activity is going to be added to what you've written in your cover letter, in your resume. So that is really important. Being strategic on how you present yourself on LinkedIn, on how your activity elevates your professionalism, your expertise is really important. Failing to read the room. This is, you know, part of that interview conversation that we had before. But I think that what I want to add here that I haven't said yet is that I work with mostly with, you know, middle managers and senior managers. Not to say that young career professionals can't work with me. It's just that my expertise is helping people in their late 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. That's where I sort of like to work. My average age is towards the late 40s, and my average sort of job titles would be heads of to directors and so forth. I do have project and product managers as well that I work with. So what happens at that level after you're very experienced is that you might be coming into the room thinking people already know that you are an expert in your field, and that is not the case. So there is a level of vulnerability that you need to accept if you want to change organizations, even internally, if you're going for a promotion, you might still have to accept that level of vulnerability. But if you're going externally and you're talking to people, even if you've been referred to them by a friend, a former manager, a former colleague, they still need to know you from the bottom up, right? So there are sort of basic initial conversations that you need to have. I find that sometimes people just assume that they will walk into a room and everybody will already know everything about them and love them and be so excited to see them. But they're actually seeing more people, not just you. Chances are, you know, sometimes it happens that they're only looking at one candidate, but that's very rare. Usually they're looking at 2, 3, 4, 5 options, and you need to make a good impression. And that emotional intelligence to read the room, to understand, to be vulnerable, and to ask for the opportunity to show your interest in the role. Many people forget that. I think it's a mix of maintaining status quo and ego, but just fight and flight and just not knowing how to deal well with the stress of the situation. The final mistake in this article is foregoing leveraging your network. I don't know why it's last. It should have been the first, because more experienced professionals have a real, real problem networking for job opportunities. They really do. They often think that they need to be completely ready, have a very perfect pitch, or, you know, they need to be really desperate to reach out to their network. And that's not the case. I think reaching out to your network over time, nurturing them when you need a job and when you don't, helping them out as much as asking for advice is really important. And you should always tap on your network for advice, for mentoring, for intelligence about organizations. It doesn't necessarily, and it shouldn't actually, be about asking for a job. It's not a bother. People love to give advice. They love to support and help others. It gives other people a great feeling to know that you've asked them for help, that you need them for something. And I think it's really important to build those professional collegial conversations and friendships over time during your career. And look, if you don't have that yet, it doesn't mean that you can't start now. Remember, you probably have 10, 20, 30, 40 years ahead of you. So start now. Look back and see, you know, who you can reconnect with if you have lost touch with a few people. I told you I was going to add a couple of my own mistakes to that list, and I would love to get your views on this. And these mistakes are things that I'm just typing up on my phone so I don't forget, because I knew I wanted to do a podcast about this. And then I saw this article as part of my research, and I'm like, okay, I don't have to come up with that many mistakes, because this article already has so many great advice, and I will just add a little bit more. And here it is. The first mistake that a lot of professionals have done, as I see it, is, this will sound so dumb to you, and I hope you can understand me, it's not taking care of their email address. There it, I said it. It's not the first time I say this. If you've been listening for a long time, you know I'm obsessed with email addresses. I really am. But the reason why I am obsessed with email addresses is because I know that recruiters make fun of them. And I know that even when people don't make fun of your email address, if you have a weird one, that your email address might be damaging your brand. So for example, often I have clients that want to get out of academia and come into the corporate world. Here in Australia, higher education is sort of going through some changes, and they have been making some academics redundant, and they say to me, oh, you know, people will see me as an academic. And I'm like, well, yes, we need to change that in your resume, but why don't we start by changing it on your email address? So if you say that you're Dr. Renata Bernardi, or Renata Bernardi PhD, or Professor Renata Bernardi, that's already sending a message that you are an academic. So I see this all the time. If you're listening to this podcast and you've been talking to me, it's not about you in particular. I do get that at least once a fortnight. Okay? So that's the first thing. The second thing in terms of emails is when I have clients or prospect clients, because if you are my client, you probably have already changed your email, say, I really want people to understand I now have a permanent residency in this country. I'm here to stay, but I'm still finding it hard to find an employer. It could be somebody from overseas that is trying to find a job in Australia. I'm in Australia. Or if you are in the Middle East and you're from overseas, or if you are in Europe, but you are from overseas, it doesn't really matter. And then they look at your email address and your email address says something about your home country. So for example, I used to have an email that was renata@yahoo.br. Okay. BR stands for Brazil. ES stands for Spain and so on. So you want to change your email address. Just find a gmail.com, like a simple one. Even if you have an email address, like here in Australia, some old email addresses like bigpond.com might show you're a bit out of date and rusty with technology. Remember rusty with technology? So you might want to update as well. But if you have some sort of funny email address or a family email address or an address together with your husband, no, just find yourself a new email address. I can't tell you how important it is. It's first impressions, right? In talking about first impressions, here's another one. Your LinkedIn photo and your banner behind it. That's first impression for you. Why would you have a LinkedIn photo of you with a blurred image, with sunglasses, not dressed professionally, you know, wearing a wedding suit, or it's clear that the photo is from a social outing and not a professional photo? I'm not saying you need to have a photo taken by a professional photographer, but maybe you should. If it's so hard for you to get a nice photo done, which it shouldn't be, like so many people have great phones that take good photos these days. But look, if it's that hard, just get it professionally done. I can't tell you how important this is. When people get your job application, the first thing they will do is go to LinkedIn and find you. And if you have a black and white photo where you're looking unhappy, not smiling, too serious, or have any of the other things I've just mentioned before, that's not good. Banners are also so, so risque. I don't know why people just don't have the simple LinkedIn banner. Like, don't take any risks. Just don't have a banner. Some of them are too fancy, there's too much detail, too much information. They don't look like a banner of somebody that's looking for work. I would just go for a simple LinkedIn banner, not something you do at Canva. I don't think that Canva banners are for professional job seekers, people that are white collar workers looking for work. There, I said it. I'm sorry. I love Canva for other things, but not for this. Your LinkedIn headline is the final mistake from me. The headline is the most important set of keywords. So if you think about, just search for somebody on LinkedIn. I want you to go to LinkedIn now, go to the search box and search for somebody, and then look at the list. That list will have the photos of individuals and bits of the headline, just the first few words of the headline. It doesn't even fit the entire headline. So if you have some grandiose thing written in that headline and not your actual job title, for example, or your area of expertise, then it will be harder for you to be attractive to a recruiter who's doing research, trying to find a project manager, a product manager, a CIO, a CFO, a financial controller. Like, they're looking for specific roles for their clients. They're not looking for talented problem solver. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you have to figure this out for yourself, or you can do a LinkedIn audit with me. Either way, the headline is super important. Together with your photo, it's the two first things that recruiters will see when they're doing research on LinkedIn. And as I have explained time and time again, that's usually how they find the top candidates for the roles that they are recruiting for, especially middle manager, senior roles, executive roles. Oh, that's it. This is the episode for today. If you haven't subscribed to the podcast, subscribe now. You know what I've done the other day? I found out that if you go to Amazon and you type Renata Benatti, or if you type the Job Hunting Podcast on Amazon, like whatever Amazon you're in, whatever country you're in, you will find the podcast in there and you can listen for free. So we are everywhere. Apple, Spotify, Audible, Amazon. Oh boy, so many other iHeartRadio. I don't know. Tell me, where do you listen to us? Or you can just listen on the blog, of course, because then you have the blog. You can read the blog, get all the details there, check out my services. So that's great too. So subscribe to the podcast. Give it a 5-star rating on Spotify. If you're on Apple, remember to also write something nice about us. It's so important for us. And we're also on YouTube. So if you want to see me, I'm wearing a purple jumper. It's very cold here in Melbourne today. If you want to see me, you can see me. I'm on YouTube. Okay. Bye for now, everybody. See you later. See you next week.